Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
So soon to be a very chilly Todd Zwillick takeaway Washington correspondent. Any chance conservatives on the Hill will heed the global warning alarms if they see it as something of a tax rather than as a catastrophe?
Oh, I would say if they saw it as something of a tax, it might have the opposite effect, John. You know, the idea of the carbon tax has been around on Capitol Hill a long time. It fell flat on its face, and that's why we landed with cap and trade, which fell right on its face. We're nowhere close to consensus on that issue right now.
Senate is in session today. Run down the agenda, if you can. I mean, there's the sort of the meat and potatoes of what the Senate has to do, and that involves unemployment insurance. But there's also some punctuation, some appointments that need to be confirmed.
Yeah, and that's all happening today, and there's some other longer-term issues coming up in the next couple of weeks. But just today, as soon as the Senate gets back, the first thing out of the gates is a confirmation vote for Janet Yellen to be the new chairman of the Federal Reserve. This is, of course, after an eight-year run by Ben Bernanke, two full terms, and Janet Yellen, I'm willing to predict, will be confirmed this evening. This is a straight up or down vote, not a 60 vote. She already passed that. You know, Janet Yellen was one of the first big officials, presidential appointments, who got a cloture vote under the new nuclear option Senate rule. So she's headed for confirmation this evening. Now, John, you mentioned some other big issues, economic issues. Unemployment insurance benefits, as we talked about last week, and people may not remember, unemployment insurance benefits expired for 1.3 million short-term unemployed on December 28th. They have not gotten their checks since. And in those families where they might be relying on unemployment insurance checks, that money makes a big difference. There's going to be a vote, a 60-vote threshold tonight in the Senate to extend benefits for just 3 weeks, unpaid for, Democratic initiative, but there is some Republican support and a Republican co-sponsor from a high unemployment state. And this vote's going to be close. And if it fails, it's going to be a big political issue as well, Democrats are promising.
Now, you know, the unemployment rate state by state makes this more of a bipartisan issue. I mean, I note that, for instance, in Tennessee, conservative Bob Corker and questionable conservative, but he mostly votes conservative, Lamar Alexander, are under some pressure perhaps to vote for the resumption of these benefits.
Democrats are relying on this very pressure to try to get unemployment benefits passed. This debate has gone on and on, on and off for many, many years since the 2008 crash. Even actually before that, when unemployment benefits began to be extended, even before the housing bubble and the housing collapse that affected the economy so badly. It is true in Tennessee there is some pressure, but let's look even further west for a second, John. Nevada, which has an unemployment rate of 9%, tied for the worst in the nation. Conservative Republican Senator Dean Heller's no dummy. He has high unemployment in his state, a horrible housing market, and he is co-sponsoring a $6.5 billion three-month extension of unemployment benefits unpaid for. And that's unusual to see this kind of bipartisanship on a deficit spending bill, which is what it would be. But he's the only Republican out supporting it so far. Democrats are obviously relying on Dean Heller, of course. He's a co-sponsor. But then on some other Republicans who've said that they're open to extending unemployment under certain circumstances. Look at Lisa Murkowski, who's from Alaska. You mentioned Lamar Alexander from Tennessee. There are a couple of others, maybe Mark Kirk, who's from the high unemployment state of Illinois. He's another one. But Republicans, John, haven't said they don't want to extend UI. They have said we don't want to do it without paying for it. That means spending cuts elsewhere in the budget. We can extend this, but we're going to keep cutting spending elsewhere. You've heard this old argument before. The problem with doing that, Democrats say, is that just takes money out of one other part of the economy to put it in another part of the economy for unemployment. That's sort of an emergency, a stimulative emergency. You shouldn't be cutting to give elsewhere, and you might see a debate on that. Here's the political problem with cutting spending elsewhere. Republicans are worried, and I've talked to a couple of them about this. The old argument about paying for unemployment insurance is fine, and they're willing to have it, except if you do that, you're opening yourself up to a lot of potentially difficult votes from Harry Reid. He says, you want to cut spending elsewhere? You want to pay for these unemployment insurance benefits? Fine. Let's vote on corporate jets and cutting subsidies for rich people. Let's argue, let's have a vote on taking the money from direct payments for rich farmers. All of a sudden, you get into an area where it gets some difficult votes for Republicans in some populist states. And so we're going to see where this goes.
Well, certainly that's an echo, that debate, the pay your own way for spending increases or for entitlement spending is an echo from 2010 with some, you know, echoes from even earlier than that. But that's really been the sort of standard operating procedure for the GOP on Capitol Hill since 2010. Are we going to see the rollout early in this Senate session of the Democrats' attempt to use income inequality as a political issue straight through to the 2014 elections?
Oh, well, there's no question about that. We've talked about it already. Democrats have sort of been quietly telegraphing this, around town. This unemployment vote is just the first page of this. Minimum wage is another one where Democrats are hoping to use minimum wage votes not only to increase the amplitude of their populist message, but also to maybe give an advantage to Democrats in some red states who are up for tough re-elections. Mary Landrieu in Louisiana, Kay Hagan in North Carolina, Mark Pryor in Arkansas. John, they've all got really, really, really tough races in the bid for Democrats to keep the Senate. But what's the other thing about those states? Tons of agricultural workers, tons of seasonal workers, and a lot of people working right at the minimum wage, where if minimum wage is on the ballot, those senators might do better. There's no question that in coming January, February, you're going to see an increased populist push on equality and minimum wage and UI from Democrats. You will hear the same message coordinated from the president on the dais at the State of the Union at the end of the month. So Democrats are definitely mounting an election year push on this issue.
One quick thought on No Cheney in Wyoming.
Oh, well, that was a surprise this morning, Liz Cheney. You know, she cited family troubles, and nobody is exactly sure yet exactly what that means. She has five children, and everybody's hoping that doesn't mean a health problem with one of her children. The truth is that her campaign was in deep trouble to begin with, John. She was trailing in the polls against incumbent Mike Enzi. This was a Republican primary, by the way. The intra-family fight over gay marriage and that divided Liz Cheney from her sister Mary, who is married to a woman and a gay rights activist in her own right, those divisions spilled out into the public. Liz Cheney had trouble raising enough money to challenge Mike Enzi, the incumbent. So while she cited family health issues that led to the early end of her campaign, it wasn't going so great in the first place.
Todd Zwillich, Takeaway Washington correspondent. Stay warm there, Todd.
Yeah, you bet. Thanks, John. You too.
We're talking about the work week. How do you track your work hours? How are you compensated for the time you put in? From Brooklyn, I'm a teacher, so I'm not compensated for hours weekly, but I wish that were so. I put in a lot of hours outside the classroom, writing lessons, creating curriculum, grading papers. Share your story at 8778-MY-TAKE or visit us at facebook.com/The Takeaway. More on your work week on The Takeaway. Stay with us.